Here we are at the Copenhagen Dogs Festival with Biljana Todorov and Peter Glumacek. You have the fantastic film To Hold a Mountain that had its premiere at the Sundance Film Festival just earlier this year in February. Now you're here at the world's most important documentary film festival. How did you two find this very remote story of a woman fighting for her local community?
We first found the place. We fell in love with the place. We were thinking, like, what can we do with this place? We wanted to research it. We were interested in its geometrics of landscape and the light. And that was at the time when Montenegro joined NATO. And suddenly the buzz about this beautiful UNESCO protected land where traditional shepherds communities are taking their herds for summer pastures was going to become a military training and shooting and ammunition training ground. We went there. Petter was from the very first moment very active in the activist part, connecting to local communities, trying to find a way to defend the land. You're also from Montenegro, and so it's his land. From the moment we met Gara Nada that very day, when Gara jumped on her white horse to speak out for the community, the film began. But in reality, it began much earlier.
Yeah, so I'm deeply connected with this area, with this beautiful mountain through my family roots, and I had that privilege as a boy to spend my summers with cousins shepherding without water and electricity in the shepherd huts. So I really was interested from ever, I would say, to tell the story about this life and these people. And when we discovered this tragic decision to convert this beautiful protected land into the military training range, we decided to tell the story about the people and, of course, to help them to fight back this decision.
And then, like, getting to know got us another personal story, the layer of family story, it became very interesting for us how it echoed with militarization, this like two consequences of patriarchy. And we really wanted to work in parallel on violence against women, violence against nature.
Patriarchy is a good cue, because how usual is it actually to have a female community leader in this area, or a person who has this prominent position in her community?
Yeah, obviously it is not very often that you can see a woman to be the leader of the community, especially in patriarchal society. But really, one day Gara jumped on her white horse to unite the community and to tell something about this. Every patriarchal society is full of historical stories about heroes and their war merits, and women are always put in the shadow, and we know them just as the nameless mothers of the heroes from the past. In reality, I think that the women are real heroes, especially in patriarchal societies, and they are the backbone of the families and the family's economy and everything. So we are very happy to tell the story about women, not about those heroes who are actually pretty violent.
When you started shooting, did you have any idea how the story would develop, if they would actually win this mountain back or not?
Oh, we were pretty sure that it would be very hard. We also knew that it was an illegal decision. It was really anti-constitutional. Montenegro also is the first country in the world that declared itself an ecological country by constitution. And then, like, so many things besides this story were happening all over the place. At the same time, we knew that normally we have democratic tools to kind of turn it down. It's a part of the world where democracy never really took root at the moment of European and history in general, where democracy is much in crisis. Nobody believed, and at the same time we really believed and wanted, and it was like a very important moment also to keep alive this belief in democratic possibility.
How did you connect to your main character and her teenage daughter, who also plays a very essential role in the story?
It was actually instant, because that day that is actually in the scene when she first time is on the horse giving the speech, that is really the moment when it became obvious from our side that they're really amazing participants and that there is more. We didn't know everything at that time, but we felt that there is more to their relationship that was so intense, and we kind of wanted to get closer. They also came to us. It's maybe just affinity and the sense of trust, also feeling we all have courage to say what we think. So that definitely put us closer. In some ways, we believe they also probably unconsciously and then consciously wanted to share their story and felt that maybe it's the right moment. And then at the very end, Gara is a very smart woman. In our opinion, she also felt that the creative process of filmmaking and working on the community narrative and the personal narrative is something that can help Nada emancipate out of like her trauma and her personal tragic narrative.
Yeah, Gara is really a very intelligent person, very specific, and she's devoted in her life completely to love, to care. And she deeply cares about everything around her, not only her children and her family, but the place she's living in, the nature, the history, everything. She's very interested. She's a real political being. And for her, it was pretty natural to jump on the horse and to tell something and to try to change the circumstances around her. And she's always in fight. She's full of belief that it's possible to do something. And it was, you know, really encouraging for the others around her to join and to try through democratic means to change something.
How much did they themselves bring to the story? Did they have specific ideas for scenes or moment where they said, you should film this, or also maybe don't film this?
Actually, that's a very good question. We had over more than 7 years, more than 230 shooting days. And in those days with camera, we often shot like very little, half an hour to an hour or three images, sometimes even nothing, rarely much more. We understood very quickly that we really needed to follow the pace of trust. So we spent a lot of time, especially in first years, observing the life that is very cyclical. At the beginning, we didn't necessarily think that we would include their personal story, that we would focus that much. We were more interested in consequences. We understood the organization of the space, which lenses we are using and how we position ourselves. And often we were filming something else when something other happened. Like we would film some banal morning routine and then like the famous scene in bed where Nada wakes up asking about her mother. Almost nothing was said, but we had a lot of time to observe and to kind of be there. And sometimes we even left leaving the camera and we thought we might never use this. And that's where Gara came and said, but we really need and want to share our story. And then towards the very end of the process, like really the last shoots, they kind of unconsciously also felt they wanted to share something. So Nada came to us and said, I wrote a poem. I would like to read it to my mom. Like, can you film it? Gara was looking for occasion to tell Nada the hard truth. And she also in a way, in good way, used us to maybe get protection and frame that. That's the way they contributed. It's just they keep repeating the same things. And we could observe like that time in the morning, the light is amazing, or the fog plays maybe some role in the dramaturgy. So whenever it was foggy, we filmed a bit more. And
I would say that early in the process of our research and presence in the mountain and our life together with them was that their personal story is present in a very specific way, that it is a taboo. It's not easy to talk about everything what is going to happen in the life. We wanted to catch it in the way we discovered, very spontaneously, not to ask any questions, not to make interviews, just to give the chance the audience to discover the full story the way we discovered it, to transform our own experience into the experience of watching the film.
But when you say taboo, it's not that there was taboo between us, it's that we know that culturally hard personal things, especially happening to women, it's taboo in the society. So we decided to respect this norm, to not to expose them or ask them to talk in a way they wouldn't naturally, to kind of work around this taboo in silent way and see how it will manifest.
How hard was it to shoot in this terrain?
It is pretty tough because it's not possible to move by the car through that terrain. Even it is very hard to reach that point, the several hours, a very bumpy road. Just at the end of our process, after 7 years of work, this road is made to be proper asphalt road. And on the terrain itself, it was pretty hard. Some of the scenes, especially the one in the fog, when we have this huge mission of rescuing the small calf, was pretty hard and pretty difficult. And we are very grateful to our DP, Eva Kraljevic, who worked with us.
So she was very brave.
She's very brave and very dedicated. So she did a great job through all the shootings, especially in that scene. But yes, we were there for many months, many shooting days and much more without camera. We adapted to the circumstances, and we devoted a lot of time to catch the real moment, the real life.
A lot of the scenes that you see in the film are like a top of the iceberg. That concrete scene that Petter refers to, we've been looking for this calf for a couple of days and for the cow. And then we put in the film the end of the story. At times we had a bigger crew, but often we decided that it's just three of us because it was really like a damaging intimacy. And it was not easy to take care of a lot of people in such conditions. Not everybody was prepared to kind of this hardship. So the most of the time it was Eva, Petter and myself.
So we lived in a very small cottage, shepherd's cottage, maybe 12 square meters. We did without electricity, without water, to prepare the food, to prepare the fire every day, to have a generator for recharging the batteries, copying materials, and of efforts and work to be done every single day.
At the beginning of our discussion, you mentioned that Montenegro just joined the NATO, and we have often the idea of the countries in the NATO like being protected, having the equal rights. But how do the people in the region actually feel about this joining, and how much would you say does this ideal of the NATO protecting the countries and very harsh reality collide?
We witness an overall militarization of the world, and we're looking for many excuses to do that, and look where it led us. And both of us grew up in former Yugoslavia, which was very open-minded socialist country, one of non-aligned countries. So we grew up with the idea that wars belong to the past and that we should kind of do everything to prevent further conflicts, which was very naive, I admit. But then on the other hand, this Balkan area has always been between two empires, to be simple, Russia and US and Ottoman Empire and Austro-Hungarian Empire and all that. We also have right to have a different vision and say, no, we don't want that. We just want to be non-aligned, and we want to plead for a different approach to the equilibrium in the world.
Related this specific place and this specific decision, it was really strange to proclaim this area as a military training ground, as it is under UNESCO protection for more than 50 years. It is also the part of Natura 2000 areas within the European Union, and Montenegro is one of the countries which is waiting to be the member of European Union. So we are following all the European legislation and rules. This land is the part of MNO's network based on the Bern Convention, one of the most precious species of the nature in the world. Yes, we also discovered and learned during this 7-8 years long process that this land is actually protected by the local communities. Traditional way of pastoralism. These areas today are called ICCAs. It means Indigenous People and Local Communities Conserved Areas. And we are just about registration of Mountain Sinjevina as one of ICCAs in this United Nations registry. So, and it was also unconstitutional decision because based on Aarhus Convention, all European countries signed, including Montenegro, when we are making decisions about environment, about really public space and the wealth we have to share, local communities and citizens have to be included in those decisions. In the case of Sinjevina Mountain, it was not case. So the local communities, the citizens of Montenegro, were not asked whether or not they agreed to convert this beautiful land and the place to produce the food and to live in really symbiosis with the nature is to be or not turned into military training ground.
But wasn't it also one of the first countries that were not asked by referendum if they want to join alliance or not?
Yes, it was also the case. We became the part of NATO without asking the citizens about it.
Now that you had your film premiere at Sundance, now you're at Copenhagen, and I'm sure you have many other big festivals lined up. How does it feel to go on tour with this film?
Today is an important day because it's our European premiere here in CPH Docs. It feels good. We're invited everywhere, and it's great to see that audiences really love this film. Like, we also love our film, but we couldn't measure that, like, such a broad audience would react in such a warm way.
Now that you present this film to predominantly Central European audience, what would you hope that people take away from it?
The main emotional thread in the film is really this feeling of empowerment, empowering ourselves to act for ourselves. Gara is an incarnation and the symbol of that. And in a way, as we were working on this film, we had a feeling that her life in that particular context, the life moment, was nearly some kind of Greek drama. As we were working along throughout these years, we were looking for this resonancy and this more universal level. Seeing the film now many times with audiences, we really have a feeling that people identify with her and feel her victories as their own victories. There are good news in the film, but the end is not fully happy end, even though the film is like has depth but also light. And this ending is very right. It's like we end when we feel that Nada is empowered and that we can let her go in this dangerous world, but at the same time having won two big victories. And it's this feeling that we would like people to depart with.
And I would add that really I believe and I think that this film will remind people that the love is ultimate power to change the world, that love is something that gives us the sense of life and living, and it is also a political tool, and also that solidarity and democratic processes can do something for the people, and that the public wealth, what we share, is the most important thing if we want to live really the happy life.
Thank you. That's a perfect conclusion. So To Hold a Mountain is now at Copenhagen Docks, and we let you know if it gets a local release. Thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you.
Thank you.